ॐ पार्थाय प्रतिपोदितां भगवता नारायणेन स्वयं व्यासेन कथितां पुराणमुनिना मध्ये महाभारतम् अद्वैतामृतवर्षिणीं भगवतीं अष्टादशाध्यायिनीम् अम्बत्वामनुसन्धतां भगवद्गीते भगवद्वेषिणी. इन्द्रियाणां हि चरताम् इन्द्रियाणां हि चरताम् यन्मनो निविधीयते यन्मनो निविधीयते तरस्य हरति प्रज्ञाम् तरस्य हरति प्रज्ञाम् वायुर्नावम् इवाम्भसि वायुर्नावम् इवाम्भसि. इन्द्रियाणां हि चरताम् यत् मनः अनुविधीयते तत् अस्य हरति प्रज्ञां वायुः नावम् इव अम्बसि. वायुः नावम् इव अम्बसि. Indriyas, the indriyas are the sense organs. So indriyanam is in genitive plural. He, yasmat, because. So he either means indeed or verily, or it also can mean yasmat, because, which it often does. So because indriyanam, charitam, for the indriyas, which of the indriyas which are moving. We'll just keep it genitive for now. We have to see in context. Charitam is a present participle in the genitive plural. Chatter means to move. So those sort of moving along. So indriyanam charitam, for the moving indriyas. Yet manaha, the mind which, anuvidhiyate. Anuvidhiyate means to obey. But in the Bhasha you'll say it means to obey in the sense of the follows. So the mind which is following after the indriyas which are moving. Okay, it's subservient to. The mind is obeying, is subservient to these indriyas that are moving all around. So wherever the indriyas go, wherever the sense organs go, the mind devotedly follows. Okay? Tadasya hadati prajnam. Such a mind, tet. So, yet manaha, have you seen that? The mind from the top line, yet manaha, the mind which is following after, in obeying these indriyas. That mind, tet. Asya yettehe. For the person, for the one who is striving to gain this knowledge. So that mind, hadati, it robs, takes away, the prajnam, the knowledge, asya, of him, of who? The yeti, of the sage, of the one who is trying, the mumukshu, the one who is trying to gain this knowledge, the one who is trying to understand. or for any samsari, but remember that the Gita is really for the mumukshu. And so in a previous verse it said, even for the yeti who has knowledge and is making proper effort, even for that person, these indriyas, which are so strong, can take away the mind. Right? That was in the verse 60. These indriyas that are so strong, indriyani, pramatini, haranti, they rob away, prasabam, forcefully, the mind. They take away the mind by force with great force. Even for that person, yatataha, the purushasya yatataha, the person, that purusha, who is making proper efforts, who is a vipaschit, who has viveka, means that person who is a seeker, who has viveka, who is striving to gain this knowledge. Even for that person, these indriyas, which are so powerful, can forcibly take away the mind. Okay. So all of this, these verses have been really dealing with the nature of the mumukshu, the one who has control of the mind, and what happens when you don't. So here he says, they steal away the mind for the yeti, for the sannyasi, for the karma yogi. They steal away the mind. Vayuhu navam iva ambasi, just like the wind, a boat on the sea, on the waters. Vayu means the wind. Navam is a boat. So vayuhu, the wind, navam, a boat, iva, like, ambasi, on the waters. Just like a boat on the sea. When the wind comes along, it just blows. The force of the wind just blows the boat in whatever direction. Like that, the indriyas, the going after the objects, just pull the mind. The indriyas are likened to the wind, right? Which are just pulling the mind, pulling the boat of the mind along with it. So Shankar introduces this. Ayuktasya kasmat buddhihi nasti iti uchate. He says, why? He introduces this verse saying, for the ayukta, ayukta means the one who doesn't have the karma yoga buddhi, the one who doesn't have control of the raga dvesha, doesn't have control of the sense organs. Remember, in another verse he said, to understand this control, your sense organs, your mind has to be in control of the sense organs, similar to the way that a tortoise is in control of their limbs. If something comes along that frightens them or is dangerous in any way, they just immediately withdraw them. So they have the choice, you know, for the limbs to come out or to come in. And that way, we need to have that freedom to withdraw the sense organs. It means, really, if the problem is one of the mind, but we are looking at it from the standpoint of the sense organs, because the sense organs are what land on the object, and then having landed on the object, your mind develops a desire for them and says, I want that. Right? And so now we're kind of in a way blaming the sense organs, where it's really the lack of viveka in the mind. And so for the one who doesn't have the control of the mind, when the sense organs land on an object, it can just take the mind with it. And so now the question is, does your mind, does your buddhi, have the capacity to withdraw the sense organs at will? If the sense organs are behaving in the world in such a way as to cause you pain, or to go against what you know to be true, you know, to go against dharma, or to go against your understanding, your knowledge, you know, and to get you just involved in samsara, basically. To get you involved in samsara means I need this in order to be happy. Does your buddhi have the strength of knowledge to say no? To see the untruth of it. If you see the untruth of it, that's what allows you to disengage. if the buddhi isn't strong enough, if the viveka isn't there, if the clarity isn't there, if the the clarity means that you are free from doubt in that area, right? Because you can have moments of clarity, you can have partial clarity, but you don't have enough clarity to withdraw your sense organs from that situation. So in reference to that situation, the clarity of knowledge isn't there. Because your desire, the raga dveshas, are stronger than your knowledge. So when the raga dveshas, when the likes and dislikes are stronger than your knowledge, then the raga dvesha acts like the wind, and it blows your mind in whatever direction. And so for the one who has control of the mind, means that the raga dveshas, these likes and dislikes, these vasanas, what we call vasanas or samskaras, your subtle likes and dislikes, no longer have that capacity. They're there in a subtle form. You're always, as long as you're a human being, you'll have likes and dislikes. You'll have, by subtle form, there are preferences. You'll always, as long as you're a human being, you'll have preferences, and you would prefer it to be this way, prefer it to be that way. But those preferences don't take your mind. They don't rob your mind of its viveka. They don't rob your mind of shanti. So the preferences, if we use the word preferences means I can have it, or if it's not there, that's fine too. Swamiji will say like that, and when he'll be joking, you know. Do I want that? Yeah, I want that. Oh, I'm sorry, you can't have it. Oh, that's fine. Okay. No, that's okay, fine. If you can say like that, I want that. Oh, you can't have it. No, well, that's okay, fine. There's not a ripple inside. Nothing's happened to your inner peace. The preference doesn't disturb your inner peace. If the preference disturbs your inner peace, then do you have the Dhamma, you know, Shama Dhamma? Do you have the ability to pull the mind back? And it's not a physical action. It's a recognition of the truth. Right? It's the recognition of your knowledge is what pulls the mind back. It pulls it away from that sticky situation. It leaves you in the situation and pulls you away from the problematic nature of the situation. So, here he's saying this in the negative, and next verse he's going to go to the positive. He says it like this. The mind which obeys the sense organs, means it's the sense organs and the sense objects that rule. Those are what are shining for you, right? And so it's the sense organs, that the sense objects are what are primary for you. Then, of course, the mind will be hooked up to the sense organs and be carried in whichever direction they go. And the sense organs are always going to go toward your raga dveshas. They'll go toward what you want. And that's where the commitment, that's what they mean by obedience. That's where the commitment of the mind is. So, and for the commitment of the mind to be there, it means at that moment you're overwhelmed by ajnanam. You know, you've either never been exposed to knowledge, or you've been exposed to knowledge, but your mind is overwhelmed at that time, right? Because the commitment is to the object, it's not to the truth. Yeah. The commitment is to the object. The commitment, you're going to be dragged around like the boat at sea, being blown by the wind, because that's the nature of the universe. The universe is continually changing, and objects are coming and going, and nothing is under your control, and nothing is stable. And so if that's where your commitment is, then that's going to be your experience. You know, otherwise you have to say, well, no, the universe really doesn't change. You know? So even if things are somewhat under your control, they're not under your control to the extent that the universe doesn't change. Right? And so just that alone means that you're going to be subject to that the changing waves of the universe. It's really a beautiful example. And so for such a person, for such a one whose commitment is there at that time, it doesn't have to be always. You have to remember that too. Sometimes your knowledge is strong, and sometimes your rugged dvishas are strong. Until those rugged dvishas are neutralized completely, one, they can be winning at some point in time. That's when the boat comes up. But it's when it is winning, then at that time, your knowledge is carried away. Your knowledge is robbed away by that. Just like a boat in a storm, your knowledge is robbed away. If your knowledge wasn't robbed away, there wouldn't be a problem. But the two go together. See, the two go together. If the objects are shining brightly, as I need this to be happy, at that very moment, the knowledge is robbed away. You see what I mean? It's not like the knowledge is robbed away and then this is shining brightly. The two are just two sides of the same coin. Right? And so then you have to wait for a moment of clarity to pull yourself back. Okay. So let's look at that next verse. So he's summing up now this long section. Tasmad yasya mahabaho nigrahitani sarvashah nigrahitani sarvashah indriyani indriyatebhyah tasya prajna pratishtita tasmat yasya mahabaho nigrahitani sarvashah indriyani indriyatebhyah tasya prajna pratishtita. Tasmat, therefore, yasya, for whom, hey Mahabaho, from Mahabaho, Mahabaho is the vocative. So, O great armed one, Bahu means the arms. So, Arjuna is a great warrior, so the one who has so much strength. So hey Mahabaho. Nigrahitani sarvashah indriyani. Nigrahitani means to control, to hold in your grip. It's past passive participle. Sarvashah is an indeclinable, but it means in all ways, from all sides. Indriyani is nominative plural, right? Neuter nominative plural. The indriyas, nigrahitani indriyani. Yasya nigrahitani sarvashah indriyani. For whom the indriyas are controlled, held in check. For whom the indriyas are held in check, sarvashah, from all sides, in all ways. Held in check from what? Indriyartebhyah, from the objects of the sense organs. The arthas are the objects. Indriyartha, the objects of the sense organs, in ablative, indriyartebhyah. So therefore, the one for whom, yasya, hey, strong-armed one, hey, mahabaho, nigrahitani sarvashah indriyani, indriyartebhyah, the one for whom the sense organs are held in check from the sense objects, tasya, for that one, so yasya tasya, for whom, right? For whom the sense organs are held in check, tasya, for him. So you see the correlative there? Yasya tasya, for whom, for him. So for whom the sense organs are held in check from the sense objects, tasya, for him, prajna pratishtita. For him, for that person, the knowledge is firm. Their knowledge is firm. Pratishtita means stable, steady. It's a stronger word than stable and steady. It's established, established in the sense of, like, say, if you had a huge stone platform, that is so solid it won't ever move. You know, that's the pratishtha. There's nothing that would that can shake it or move it in any way. It's absolutely firm and steady. So established, but you have to have bring in that kind of that sense of firmness to it. So for that person, for them, their knowledge is firm. And so now, this is where he's almost now concluding this section on this, because he's given his test mot. Okay. So therefore, it's the one who's able to really control the senses. For that person, their knowledge is firm and steady. That's why now there's kind of a circle of, you call it like a cyclical dependence, where as one grows, the other grows, as that one grows, as the knowledge becomes clear, your ability to be free of raga dveshas becomes more. As your ability to be free of, as you become more free of raga dveshas, that also means your mind is more steady, your knowledge is more clear. So the two are always kind of balancing each other. It's the process of gaining antakarana shuddhi in the light of this knowledge, right? So this is why we talk about knowledge with pratibandhakas. It's actually called pratibandhaka jnanam. Pratibandhaka means obstruction. It's an important thing to understand, because when, as this knowledge takes place, there's different ways to look at that process. Like, for instance, what we were just talking about before the class started. In one sense, when this knowledge, when you're first exposed to this vision, the knowledge is becoming clear in kind of vague, broad strokes. And then slowly it becomes clearer and clearer and clearer, just as the unfoldment continues. So just with shravana, just with your shravana and manana, your understanding becomes clear over time, because the knowledge is communicated through language. And language takes place word by word, sentence by sentence. Sentences build on each other, and you continue to gain the vision. You gain in clarity, and more clarity, and more clarity, and more clarity. Now, as the mind is gaining that clarity of understanding itself results in antakarana shuddhi. The clarity itself will change you, right? Because even as you start recognizing through the unfoldment, just the very logic, once you see that yourself is the changeless source of ananda, say you see that, that's a huge relief for the mind. Okay, the mind though, so the mind sees that relaxes the mind. That understanding itself brings some shanti into the mind. And so now the mind is different. It's different, just as the thing they understand is the simplicity of this. Even in daily life, prior to knowledge, your mind grows and changes based upon your understanding. As you assimilate experience, as you understand dharma, as you learn how to handle people, all of these things change the shanti, the level of shanti in the mind, right? So as our knowledge impacts how we are. And so now with this knowledge, it's going to impact how we are in the world in an even deeper way, because it gives us knowledge and understanding of what is actually the fundamental problem, what it is actually that we're seeking as human being, right? It's a resolution to the problem that all human beings are seeking, which is basically, how can I be a whole and complete being related to the whole? Right? What is my purpose here? What am I doing? Who am I? You know, is there a God? All of these kind of this total ignorance that's enveloping us that we can't see out of. You know, and that's a very personal ignorance. Who am I? What am I doing here? And how can I be happy? You know? So say in this vision as a pramana, when it's acting for you as a pramana, the knowledge is actually taking place in you, resolving some of these questions. You're starting to understand in the way of seeing it. That takes care, that resolves a huge burden And so the mind becomes lighter. As this knowledge becomes more clear, the mind becomes lighter. But this mind that is becoming lighter, more peaceful, through the clarity of knowledge, also has lifetimes of samskaras. And so that's what with those lifetimes of samskaras or tendencies that we've picked up in this lifetime, things that we've brought forward with us, the likes and dislikes, our conditionings that we have in this present day, you know, all of the conditionings that we bring forward to the past, from the past, all of these conditionings need to be worked through in the light of our knowledge. They don't just go away. Right? And so when we say emotional lag time, I know what is true. And I'm speaking now, say, I know what is true, aparoksha, in a direct, immediate way. It's not just intellectual. I know what is true. I have this vision. That's a point when you can say that I do know myself. And then you might say, but my mind doesn't live up to what I know. My mind keeps following after my raga dveshas, right? It's following after the objects, sense objects. And that's what they're talking about here. It's racing after, my mind continues to race after my likes and dislikes are these objects, and I become lost like a boat at sea in the wind, right? That's my experience, even though I know, even though I'm clear. And so this is what they're talking about in the previous verse, even the vipassacitta, even the person who has some clarity, you know, this mind with these raga dveshas, with these likes and dislikes, is very, very powerful. And so it takes some time for that mind to be brought under control in the light of my knowledge. This is exactly what the karma yoga is for. Right? So, when we say pratibandhika jnanam, it's important to understand this because you can be clear, you can know yourself, recognize yourself. And that recognition of self includes the recognition of this problem. If you don't recognize, see, let me put it this way. If you don't understand this, what we call pratibandhika jnanam, or how the mind has a lag time, then you will say, I must not know myself. Okay? I must not know myself because if I knew myself, my mind would act like it. So you have to understand why your mind is not acting like it. You have to understand that, well, let me put it this way. There's different levels to this, so I want to make sure you see all these different ones. Once you recognize yourself, and you recognize Ishvara, that this is, I recognize myself as the whole. So that means what? I recognize me, the stable one, who is sitting amidst this tumultuous mind. I am present, constantly, in exactly the same way, present to my mind, which is running out after the sense objects, getting upset about this and upset about that. But I am exactly the same while all of this nonsense is going on. Okay? And I know what's going on. Okay? That's important. That means you recognize yourself, the stable one, and you recognize your mind getting upset and acting like an ajnani. Does people understand what I'm saying? This is pratibandhika jnanam. This is what we mean by that. Okay? So you can't say that you don't know. You say you do know, but your mind needs more time to assimilate this knowledge. It just needs more time. It's a very simple thing. And this is how you probably experience it working internally. The problems that the mind has before knowledge have to they have to rise up before you and act out in the light of your knowledge. The you, the one who has knowledge now, has to deal with the problems that the mind had before knowledge. That means those problems have to present themselves, have to go behave in their habitual way in the light of you who has knowledge, who now is going to deal with those problems in a different way. Right? But until you deal with those problems in the light of your knowledge, they're just going to run their course. Mm-hmm. Because that's what they know to do. That's how they've always been. Right? It's not like, let's put it like this. Your buddhi gains knowledge. These grooves that you have in your mind are not manifest, right? Until they are. The groove that you have in your mind, once it manifests in the light of your new knowledge, then this unmanifest groove comes into manifestation, and then you deal with it, right? And then it's at that point that that particular groove, that particular habit, is then being dealt with. And then it will quickly fall off. Then there's the next one. And then there's the next one. The whole psyche, in a sense, has to come before you. It rises up before you. And this is exactly what we call that process of assimilation. Right? The mind, the whole unconscious that's problematic for you, our the subtle likes and dislikes, our preferences, our little adharmas, or the way of behaving in the world that is problematic, comes up, and it's still problematic. If it was problematic before, it's problematic now. If it caused pain before, it will cause pain now. But the difference, the huge difference is that you are different. The buddhi is different. And so that buddhi now, the intellect that has knowledge, now is dealing with this problem in a way that helps it, in a way that solves the problem. And so now, think like this. Say the buddhi is strong enough, has enough clarity of knowledge, clarity of vision, to understand all of this. You have knowledge, and you understand the mind, like raising a child, you understand its problems, and so you work with it. Do you have knowledge or not? Well, that's an interesting. I wouldn't say that. I wouldn't say that you have partial knowledge. You would have partial knowledge if you lose your knowledge. In other words, if the universe can throw you off, if your own mind can throw you off, if the way the mind thinks, or if the mind has a desire, the mind is acting up, if that throws you off, and you don't know what that is in the context of things, then you have partial knowledge because you don't understand that. It doesn't fit into your understanding. In fact, you might say, gee, I'm acting like that, I must not have knowledge. Mm-hmm. Correct.
Yeah.
Right, correct.
Yeah.
But what if this is happening, or your mind is acting this way or that way, and you do understand it? You know? Just like you understand it with another person. But this is exactly what Swamiji is doing now with these guided meditations, some of which I put on the India site. This is exactly what he's trying to make clear. It's a little bit, it's slightly different, but it's in the same realm. When you are able to include in Ishvara your entire body, mind, sense organs, your moods, your emotions, and included in that is the cause and effect, which he will call the order. The order that has brought this particular situation into being. You know, like for instance, what is the order of the universe? If somebody says something to you in a mean, with a mean voice, with a mean attitude, that statement was said to you which then caused you to be hurt, which caused you to do this, to respond in that way, which caused this. And then you think you extend it more to see why that person had made that statement, which has caused that, which has caused that. So you see now the entire complexity of the Ishwara's order, which has resulted in this experience that you're having right now. That experience that you're having right now, the experience that has been generated, has, you know, a kind of a complex cause-effect relationship that has been produced. And so say you see everything that you understand, the experience within Ishwara's order, all of the experiences that you have within Ishwara's order. And you also recognize the stable being of yourself. Okay? Say you recognize that. Okay, then you're recognizing all of this belongs to the whole. Okay, then say, now that's knowledge. You see, all of it is part of the whole. Now there's another type of knowledge, which we call, these are the Karma Yoga Buddhi, but specifically what we call Kaushalam, which is one aspect of the Karma Yoga Buddhi. Kaushalam is knowing how to handle that situation. How do I handle it in light of my knowledge? When my mind is behaving like this, or I feel hurt, or whatever is going on, just, and I'm talking about internally. How to be with that in such a way as to bring it to peace. It's just like, say, for instance, a therapist. As a therapist, we study, you know, to learn how to be with our clients in the room in such a way, to be with a client in such a way as to let that, whatever it is that they're dealing with, be worked through to a point of resolution. Resolution means what? To a point that I'm at peace with it. Right? So I learn how to, through experience and through training, I learn how to be with my client in a way to facilitate that process. So whatever is the problem can be worked through. That's Kaushalam. So the therapist studies and gains that ability. We need to gain that ability in reference to the problems that our own mind goes through, in reference to working with the world, in reference to the whole Karma Yoga Buddhi, being able to accept things, to be able to get totally engaged in the universe, and at the same time accept the results as prasadam. But learn how to do it. It's a skill, right? So now, say if you understand what I've just said, that, oh, it's a skill, that I have to really practice that skill. Now say, you've understood that. Okay, there's this skill. I need to be able to practice that skill. I understand it, so I'll practice it. Now the situation comes up, and that skill is required. It is time to practice the skill, okay? And then you fail at it. You fail at it. Then what do you say? This is the samatvam. The samatvam of the Karma Yoga is, oh, I need to practice a little more on that. Mm-hmm. That's all. I need to practice more on that one. Say if you can say that. Say if you have that samatva buddhi, where you understand things in terms of your vision, and you understand how to be in the world toward yourself, you understand how to be in the world toward yourself and toward the world, and you understand how to be toward yourself when yourself is failing, means when your mind is failing, right? That is knowledge. Now look, if you don't understand that as knowledge, then what you are ending up saying is that in order for me to be a jnani, the upadhi and the world have to be perfect according to whose definition? Whose definition? What does it mean? What does it mean for the world to be perfect? What does it mean for me as a human being to be perfect? It's very difficult to try to think like that. Does it mean to be perfect? Would be for me to be somehow, would it mean that I would be infallible? Would it mean that I would have no emotions? Would it would mean that in all situations I would do everything perfectly from everybody's vantage point? I mean, really, what does it mean? But when you start analyzing it, it's an absolute impossibility. In light of that, you know, and Swamiji told me maybe 20 years ago, 25 years ago, not probably a long time ago, he said something I always tell in class and I've never forgotten it. He goes, "Oh, my mind does so many funny things." It's the mind. It's the mind. It's the body. It's the situations. How are you in those funny situations? How are you with that funny mind? Right? So now, this is the thing. Your buddhi, the buddhi, the one that has knowledge, the one that has the painting has become clear. You see it. Yourself is changeless. That, if there's any perfect, if we want to say perfect, it's Brahman. Right? This whole thing, if you want to say it like that, if you can say the whole is perfect. Right? Because it's Brahman. But your being is changeless. You never have to worry about that. It is perfect as it is. It's changeless. You never have to worry about it. It's always exactly the same. And that being is the truth of all of this. So now there's, in reference to yourself, there's no problem at all. In reference, when you have nishta, in reference to your buddhi, your knowledge, no problem at all. Nishta means when you have knowledge, clarity of knowledge, nishta, knowledge doesn't go away. And yourself doesn't go away, right? Yourself is never, it's you, yourself never goes away, and your clarity of knowledge never goes away. Okay, so now, you have a self, you have the buddhi that has knowledge, and then you have the mind, the sense organs, and life, right? Which is throwing everything at you that you can conceivably imagine and not be able to imagine. Right? And your mind also is doing whatever it does in whatever situation. You know, so look like this. If you look at it in a Jungian perspective, the mind, the psyche, has an infinite amount of impressions in it. Everything that you've ever taken in is in there. All, you know, mountains and mountains of emotions and feelings and relationships, all of it is in there. Right? And so the mind itself is going to be doing interesting things. When your buddhi is firm in knowledge, those interesting things will be taking place in a relaxed mind. Because the buddhi knows how to deal with those things. Those things, the funniness, funny things in the mind, don't upset your knowledge. See that? They don't upset your knowledge. They don't upset yourself. They don't upset your knowledge. And so now, I say, do you have knowledge or not? Your mind is still working through some things. There's unconscious things that, you know, baggage that you're carrying. There's still some pains in the mind, reactions, or this or that. All of that material is there, and you're dealing with it. You're dealing with all of that. Can you say that you won't have knowledge until that is gone? We say, no, that's not acceptable. Because that would be like saying, I won't have knowledge until I have all new furniture in my house. You know, when I get all new furniture in the house, then, and everything is perfectly clean and in perfect order, then I'll have knowledge. So like that, as soon as once my mind, you know, really salutes me in terms of having totally integrated this knowledge and so behaving in behaving at one with my knowledge, then I will have knowledge. I say, no, I have knowledge now. I have knowledge now, and I can take care of my mind. Because I'm the one who has the knowledge, right? And the mind is what the emotions and the thoughts and the things that are throwing up for whatever reason, and I understand what those things are. So this is what we mean, if you want to say pratibandhaka jnanam, why do we even say pratibandhaka jnanam? Because we could just say knowledge. You have knowledge. Why are we bringing this word pratibandhaka? Because when the mind can throw up things, you know, that are, maybe, there's two ways of looking at it. The mind can throw up things that make it put it in a condition that, where I'm not feeling at peace. Pain. The mind can throw up painful affect. And so in that painful affect, that can be called pratibandhaka, pratibandhaka jnana. So why should I have painful affect? For what? Why should that even be there? You know? Because I am free. The nature of ananda is myself. There's no distance between the mind and me. So what is it that's causing that painful affect? You can just the force of habit. The force of habit. Right? But the one who's dealing with the painful affect is in pain. It's one way of looking at it. Another way, sometimes people will joke, how can you say that person's a jnani? They don't act like a jnani. Right? So being seen from the outside, the person doesn't exhibit all of the lakshanas for jnani. Why? Habit. Anyway, there's debate over whether we even want to accept this idea of pratibandhaka jnana. In some ways, I don't accept it because I don't see those things as pratibandhakas. Really, I see it. You have knowledge or you don't. You have knowledge or you don't. And if you have knowledge, whatever is going on in your mind or your body or the world or the sense organs is what's going on. And you know what's going on. But it's not disturbing your knowledge. You have knowledge or you don't have knowledge. You know? And you can say, you know, I have knowledge but I have doubts. That's not jnana-nishtha. I'm clear on most things, but I'm not clear. Right? So, I don't call that pratibandhaka jnana. It means your knowledge isn't clear yet. Your knowledge is just not clear yet. It needs more, you know, it needs more manana needs to be done in different areas. Like, for instance, you can be very clear in reference to the stability of your being, the conscious being that you are, but not clear in recognizing I am the whole. Right? You have to end up recognizing I am the whole. Do you recognize I am the whole? There's more to be understood. But the first thing that needs to be recognized is me, the stability of myself, the changelessness of myself. And then I have to recognize that this changelessness of myself is the self of all of this. Right? And so that clarity is something that's built up over time through teaching. You know, it doesn't have to be built up over time, except that words take place in time. That's the problem. You know, it's not that, oh, you have to be at this for a long time. It isn't that. It's that words take place in time. And so your clarity takes place in time, right? And the amount of time it takes to assimilate. The whole process that you continue to go through, like one thing will become clear to you, and when that becomes clear, there's a domino effect where a lot of other things become clear. Then when those things become clear and then you hear something else, And that's another domino effect, right, on all of these other things becoming clear. And so the clarity builds on itself and builds on itself with incredible depth. I used to be listening to Swamiji, and he would make something clear, and then I'd go to the class the next day, and he would go deeper into it. I'd go into the class the next day, go deeper. You know, and I was thinking, oh my God, this is something absolutely unbelievable, that no stone is left unturned. And then there's stones underneath that. There goes on and on and on and on. Until they use this example that I felt is so beautifully true. As your knowledge becomes clear, your mind moves freely like the wind through the universe. But until your knowledge becomes clear, it'll move and hit a boulder. Right? That boulder has to be removed, the boulder of that doubt. And then it'll have a little bit more room. And then it'll hit another boulder of doubt. That has to be removed. There comes a time when the mind is free. There are no more boulders. Right? There's no more questions, because it'll start there. There's where the question comes the answer. And then there's no more question, because the answer is there. So where's room for the question? There are no more questions. There's just reveling in understanding. So that's the level of clarity. You know? But then with that type of clarity, your mind takes a problem. You make up a problem. This is what you do in teaching. You make up a problem. And then you solve the problem. You know, you make up a problem. Think of some problem. The problem could be for your student, or a problem that you used to have. That's what these boshes do also. They create problems and they solve the problem. Because your mind might have that problem. Okay? When I'm teaching, I think of all the problems I've ever had. Because one of you might have that problem. Plus all the problems that the boshes present for you. Right? Any problem that you've ever been through, then you teach that problem and solve it. And you don't have, and even if you don't do that, the boshes will do it for you. They create problems and solve it, because if they can think of the problem, you may have had that problem. Right? So that's how it works. That's why your doubts are so important. Any doubt of this there is important. That's the problem. Now this problem we need to untangle, so that the mind is free in reference to that problem. Yeah. And so now, where these doubts become really meaningful for solving, is when it's a doubt in reference to your own understanding. My mind acts like this. How can I know if my mind acts like this? So wherever your knowledge is seeming to be negated, then that becomes a point, you know, for inquiry. That's the point for inquiry, you know, so that your mind can relax. Look at every one of those things as a little knot that needs to be untied, so that your mind can just relax in the universe as it is, you know. Relax with your mind as it is. Relax with your unconscious as it is. Relax with your pleasure and pain as it is, as being part of the universe. You understand it. When you're relaxed in that situation because of your knowledge, there is no problem. Right? Because there's ananda, if the mind is relaxed, there's ananda holding the problem. Right? There's the problem, whatever the problem is, whatever the situation is, that situation is being held in your ananda. Right? So and ananda, I don't mean bliss. I mean the well-being, the ananda that's the nature of yourself. So here, he says, well, we went on quite a journey. Okay. The one who has this jnana pratishtha, who prajna pratishtha, the one whose knowledge is steady is the one whose sense organs aren't taken away by the sense objects. You have to understand that meaning means their knowledge is not taken away. Their mind is not taken away. As long as your eyes are open, your sense organs are open, they are engaged in the world. They can be totally engaged and not be taken away. So, is your mind held by your knowledge? Whatever the mind is it held by your knowledge? If the mind is held by your knowledge, by the buddhi, right, then the mind engages in the sense organs in a way that it can't get lost. But if the knowledge is not strong enough, then the mind is taken away by the sense perception. Because raga dvesha. So our task in shravana and manana is to just build up our understanding. Because the stronger your more clarity that you have, the more naturally your knowledge holds your mind. Now that means also, though, that the mind has to be understood. Because if the buddhi has to understand the mind and the problems of the mind. Right? Because if the buddhi doesn't understand the problems of the mind, then the mind isn't really being held. You see that? It's only if the mind behaves in this way the buddhi understands it. If the mind is being good, right? If the mind is acting like a true jnani, if the mind is acting like a mumukshu, if the mind is behaving like it has knowledge, then the buddhi understands it. That means the buddhi doesn't understand the mind, doesn't understand the psychology of the mind, doesn't understand vasanas and samskaras, subtle likes and dislikes, doesn't understand the process of the mind having to work through these things, so then the buddhi can't hold that mind. Do you see that difference? This level is a very important level, because usually we don't think about the buddhi understanding kind of the psychodynamics of the mind, what the mind needs. But if the buddhi doesn't, in light of knowledge, if the buddhi does understand that, then the mind, whatever it's doing, is being held. And your knowledge is firm. Do you see? Okay. Let's take a minute. Purnamidah Purnamidah Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti.